Welcome to the Allowed Podcast. I'm Louise Steinman, curator of the Allowed series, presented by the Library Foundation of Los Angeles. Allowed is a series of dynamic lectures, readings, performances, and discussions that take place in the Mark Taper Auditorium at the historic Downtown Central Library in the heart of Los Angeles. To learn more about Allowed and learn how you can help the Library Foundation of Los Angeles support the Los Angeles Public Library, please go to our website, www.alloudla.org. The Allowed program you're about to hear was produced in 2009. Let me just give some brief bios here to our fabulous panel. Tom Seller is the editor of Theater Magazine and associate professor of dramaturgy and dramatic criticism at Yale University. His criticism and reporting have appeared in the New York Times, the International Herald Tribune, American Theater, and other national publications. He is currently writing a book about theater in Eastern Europe since 1989. We went on a strange field trip together in Wrocław last spring. He is very knowledgeable about Polish theater, I can attest. He has researched, written for, and edited special editions of his the Yale's Journal of Criticism Theater about New Polish Theater. And he's currently preparing a volume on the ideas of influential Polish director Krystian Lupa. And you'll hear a little bit more about him tonight. Richard Schechner is coming to you via Skype tonight from Austin, Texas. This is a first for us. Richard Schechner is university professor and professor of performance studies at the Tisch School of the Arts at New York University. He's the editor of TDR, the Journal of Performance Studies, general editor of The Worlds of Performance, and co-editor with Carol Martin of Enactments, Seagull. His books include Environmental Theater, which was a great Bible of theater students in the 70s and 80s, Between Theater and Anthropology, The End of Humanism, Performance Theory, The Future of Ritual, and Performance Studies, an Introduction. He founded the Performance Group, an East Coast artist. He's directed plays in India, South Africa, and China, many other productions that have been seen around the world, and he is the curator of the 2009 Year of Grotowski in New York. David Sefton, our moderator, I'm sure many of you know David from UCLA Live. He was appointed director of UCLA Performing Arts in October of 2000, and previously he was head of contemporary culture at the Royal Festival Hall in London, where he created and produced the annual Meltdown Festival. And UCLA Live, which as you know is an ambitious annual series of music, dance, and performance, which is renowned here in LA and all over the country and internationally. Joanna Kloss is the founding director of Arden 2, which if you haven't heard of it, is behind the scenes of all the wonderful Polish theater that comes to Los Angeles. It facilitates exchanges between Polish and American artists. She's brought a broad spectrum of contemporary Polish theater to the United States, including the Jarenica Theater Lab, Song of the Goats, Teatr Prowizorium, the Mojeska Theater Company, the Wrocław Puppet Theater, Teatr Warszawa, and Teatr Czar. And she, for the last year, she has been leading the 2009 UNESCO-sponsored Grotowski Year on behalf of the Grotowski Institute. We're also very, very honored tonight to have Grzegorz Jarzyna, one of Poland's most renowned stage directors. He has degrees in philosophy from the Jagiellonian University. He's been the artistic director since 1998 of Teatr Warszawa, one of Poland's most innovative theaters. He's staged and radically reinterpreted classical drama, tropical craze according to Witkiewicz, magnetism of the heart, adapted major European novels, and directed famous contemporary plays, Sarah Kane's 4.48 Psychosis in Warsaw and Dusseldorf, and many well-loved operas. He's won numerous international prizes and distinctions, and his latest production, I believe it's the U.S. premiere, Teremat, is based on the work of Pier Paolo Pasolini, and it has his U.S. premiere this week as part of UCLA Live. We have literature on UCLA Live in the lobby, and you'll be hearing more about this production tonight. Please welcome our distinguished panel. Thank you very much.
Evening all. I'm David Sefton. You've got the bios, so I don't have to reintroduce myself. Okay, let's pull our mics in. Do I actually need this thing?
You need the microphone for me to hear.
Oh, all right. Oh, yes, of course. I need it for the podcast. Evening, all. Better? Cool, okay.
Yes, I can hear fine.
Can the internet hear me now? I am here, well, it's all Joanna Klass's fault, mainly, but then so much of that is true. I am here mainly because of an enthusiasm for Polish theatre and for international theatre in general. When I arrived in these United States in 2000, one of the first ever trips I took, I think Berlin was the first one and Warsaw was the second. The first night I landed in Warsaw, I was taken to Christian Luper's Master and Margarita, which was about 7 hours long and completely extraordinary. And also was like attending a Madonna concert. It was full of kids and people clamoring for tickets. There were scalpers outside. It was one of the most extraordinary scenes I'd ever witnessed in contemporary theatre, and an absolutely extraordinary evening at the theatre. The second night, I got taken to see Gregor Jarge in his 448 Psychosis and thought, bloody hell, is it like this every night in Poland? And could not believe. And then for the course of the week, I have to say, those were the two highlights. But I saw some other really good work while I was there and was completely blown away by the quality and the innovation. It's like you knew about all these things in theory, but I'd not been to Poland before. And frankly, every other Eastern European country I've been to since has paled in comparison, with the greatest of respect to all of the other Eastern European countries I've been to. And it's long been an obsession of mine. Why is theatre so much better in Poland than almost everywhere else? And it's led to a lot of decisions made in my programming of the International Theatre Festival, particularly this year, I have to say. It's a huge, huge honor and relief that we finally got Yajida's work to Los Angeles. I've been trying for long enough, and it's not anybody's fault but my own, I guess, and money and everything else. But we've had a long-standing relationship with Polish work. And that is Joanna Klass's fault, my colleague to my left. Often the thing that makes this stuff happen, especially somewhere like America where there is so little support and you have so little help getting this work over. I'll stop whinging in a minute. No whining tonight. It's all good. And Joanna was here talking to me about companies that, as it happened, I'd seen on the road, and we started working together about 5 years ago now. And I've had this extraordinary collaborative relationship, bringing great Polish work to Los Angeles, reaching its pinnacle this year in the Grotowski year, and we're bringing Czar back to Los Angeles for the second time, bringing T.R. Woszower for the first time, and Polish work taking its rightful place on the international stage of our festival. I'm going to start with Joanna and move on to, and be more of a moderator and less of a talker, to talk a little about my history with Polish theatre goes back 5 years and 10 years in terms of seeing it in this country. Joanna has a much more extensive history with the work and also being based in this country. Tell me then, what is it about Polish theatre? What is the thing? Share with us.
Where to start?
No, exactly.
Yes. By the way, I want to say that I spent my first night in Los Angeles when I landed here in 1984, in July 1984. I went to theater and I saw Tadeusz Kantor's Dead Class. That's what I saw in Los Angeles, which was a seminal Polish theater work. And I felt that Los Angeles has an amazing audience, very receptive, very open. Very open to experimental work that comes from other countries. What I want to say is actually mention why this year we are trying to intensify our efforts to expose you to Polish theater. Because this is 2009 and it is the year of Jerzy Grotowski. It's UNESCO declared Grotowski Year, a seminal Polish theater figure that made great impact on theater, world theater, and also on culture. In the late 60s and early 70s, and he also resided in Southern California. He actually worked in early 80s at UC Irvine, where he created part of his theory, the theory of objective drama, actually was developed in Southern California. Also, this is a year of Modjeska, and Helena Modjeska is well known to you. She was a famous Polish actress that chose to move to Southern California, baited by the ads of prosperity and beauty, mission life. She actually envisioned running an arts colony, and she brought a lot of European, mainly Polish artists, to Orange County and Anaheim, and they had an idea of raising olives and oranges, and it was a complete financial disaster. So she got on the road and started performing in over 1,000 places in the United States for the next 30-some years, and I'm sure you're familiar with that name. So to celebrate those two great Poles who were here, we created a program that we called Polish Theater Fall in California. I brought some propaganda, which is at the entrance, I believe, postcards. I want to show you. I'm very well prepared. It's a little green leaf postcard, says Polish Theater Fall in California. It lists a lot of auxiliary events. Apart from David hosting two theater, Polish theater companies, TR Warszawa with Grzegorz Jarzyna's work Teoremat opening this Wednesday, Teatr Zar opening December 1st, we are also featuring lectures, seminars, workshops, concerts, a conference at UC Irvine, and most of these events are open to the public. And I hope to see you out there. I would like to turn now to Richard. Hello, Richard.
Hello, Joanna. Nice to speak.
I know that, first of all, you're the curator of the Grotowski Year in New York, but you're the person that lived through the initial invasion of Polish theater in the 60s and 70s. Could you reminisce a little bit about Grotowski and Kantor?
Yes, well, I can. I certainly can, and probably more about Grotowski than Kantor, but I knew him also. So I first met Grotowski actually in 1966 in Montreal. He had come there for Expo, which was a World's Fair in Montreal, and I traveled up there to meet him. I had known about him and had published his work from 1963 forward. In fact, I was editing the Tulane Drama Review, which has now become TDR, and that was the first place in English, possibly, certainly in the United States, that Grotowski's work was translated and published. So I wanted to meet him, and I did an interview with him. Ted Hoffman and I interviewed him, and that interview was published in Towards a Poor Theater. And then it was going to be that Grotowski was going to come to the United States the next year in 1967. Here, he and Richard Czeslak, and they came and they did an acting workshop at New York University in November 1967. I was very fortunate to be a member of that workshop. At first, my fellow faculty members wanted me to be an observer, and I said I would not be an observer, I would be a participant. I was the oldest participant. And it was me and a bunch of graduate student actors at the School of the Arts of NYU. And out of that workshop actually came two very important theaters, Andre Gregory's Manhattan Project and my own performance group, which later became the Wooster Group. So that Grotowski's training, as transmitted by him and by Czeslak, was instrumental in the formation of the American theater at that time. There were other groups, of course, like the Living Theater, the Open Theater, And they were developing their own strand of work, but I think the Grotowski influenced strand of work, mine and Andre's, also had a very deep input. Grotowski's work itself did not appear at that time. It was scheduled that he would appear in 1968, but 1968 was an extraordinarily uproarious year, a terrible year, and also a year of opportunity, a year when Martin Luther King was shot and then Robert Kennedy was shot. There were riots in many American cities. There was upheaval in Paris. There was upheaval in Mexico City. To make a long story short, Grotowski was refused his visa, and the company did not show up in 1968 as was planned. But they did show up in 1969, and that was a transformational moment. They performed at the Washington Square Methodist Church. And they I'd have to check my records whether they also performed at the Brooklyn Academy of Music at that time. They certainly performed at the church, and they did Acropolis and Constant Prince, and I think you're going to show some fragments of Constant Prince, and later Apocalypse's Cum Fragoris. And these were instrumental works. We were kind of deceived in a way, because these works were absolutely new to us. And they were riveting because they combined several things in ways that had never been combined before in the American theater. The deconstruction of classic text and the construction of a textual montage, a kind of Eisenstein for the stage. Actors who were trained with such a physical and psychophysical precision as we had never seen before, with great vocal control. Staging that was environmental theater type staging, which I had done with Dionysus in 69 from 1968 forward, and other people had experimented with it, but Grotowski was a master for this. In other words, not audiences sitting in a house looking on the stage, not even end stage, but performances that whose total shape was part of what the performance was. So but when I said it was somewhat deceptive, Grotowski himself was already moving out of the theater at that point in 1969. He was already moving towards theater, not yet theater of sources, but para-theater and other theater that was leading on towards his more later work that he conducted both in Poland and then in Italy. But we saw his theater work, so that was one thing. At the same time, at roughly the same time, Cantor showed up, and his first work in New York and perhaps in the United States was The Dead Class, and I see you're going to have a fragment of that as well. And Cantor was both very much alike and very different than Grotowski. I don't think there was particular love lost between them. And Grotowski was at that point a shady figure in a certain way. He wore his dark glasses, his dark suit. You did not see him in the theater as such. He was there, but his actor spoke for him. Cantor, of course, was a visual artist. He was an artist who was wildly participatory in his own theater. And in The Dead Class, he would be on stage like an orchestra conductor, conducting, making slight adjustments. At first, I thought when he would go up to an actor and move an arm or something, that this is part of the play in the sense that they did the same thing every night. But when I returned to see the play, Dead Class, Night After Night, I realized that he was really making changes as an artist would make change to the canvas as the play was going on. And The Dead Class was, Cantor's enacted memory of his own school days, but shown in this grotesque, in the best way, grotesque set of people who were both themselves and puppets. They were puppets in the hands of Cantor, and they actually used life-size mannequins or puppets. And if you've seen the Cricot 2 theater, you know that two of the actors were twins, and one was Cantor's wife, and this was extremely, extremely personal and yet extraordinarily artistic. And just as Grotowski had trained his actors to this level of psychophysical truth that we had not experienced before, so Cantor had such total control over the theater. that we were seeing the Gestumkunstwerk that Wagner had promised us, but in a kind of studio version rather than grand opera, and rather than distancing, it was very close. The performances were done at the La Mama, a small theater in off Broadway on West on East 4th Street in the annex of La Mama, about 200 people watching per performance. I don't want to take up too much time, but these performances were electrifying in their beauty, in their narrative skill, in their scenography, in their costuming. And so these two great masters, very different from each other, appeared on the American scene at about the same time, and I must say probably transformed our theater.
Well, now we should actually watch the two clips and the two different things. Stick around, Richard. We'll come back to you in a minute. Thank you.
We're
queued up for Dead Class first.
Dead Class, please.
Do we want to give a little bit of information about the production or from, let's see what year, this would have been 1975, I think, something like that. And this is one of Cantor's productions, and you can see Cantor himself playing the role of the school teacher as the audience comes into the stage space. And the students in this class encounter past versions of themselves, their spiritual others, if you will.
You have a sense of the underground Polish theater because it actually takes place in a cellar in Krzysztofory.
You can see from this clip the sort of plasticity of the acting style that characterized a lot of Cantor's work, the intense emphasis on visual metaphor, and also the themes that would be characteristic of a lot of Polish drama, actually past and present, entombed together in search of some kind of spiritual resolution.
The second piece we'll see will be a fragment from Constant Prince, Grotowski's piece that was brought to New York in the late 60s.
Can we get Richard back?
Richard, yes. Here I am.
Excellent. Tempting as it is to actually sit and watch all of these tapes, but I'm quite happy to stay here all night. It's interesting you say that there was already the living theater and the open theater, and those things existed or had started to form. What was the difference? What was it that was so monumentally important about the arrival of the Poles?
Well, of course, Cantor came later than Grotowski. Yeah. Grotowski introduced a whole different way of life. Let's say the living theater also was interested in a way of life. And they were not interested in day-to-day rigorous training, though they did do some yoga and meditating. They were interested in what Judith Malina, who is still alive, still working, and her long-term partner, Julian Beck, called the glorious nonviolent anarchist revolution. And they were a highly charged political theater. The IRS seized their theater in New York in 1964, and they went off to Europe, and they actually returned to the United States with Paradise Now, Mysteries, and Frankenstein, three great pieces in 1968. So these were very important days. My own Dionysus in 69 opened in 1968. As I said, Grotowski was there personally with Czesław in 67, and his theater came in 69. So there's a big burst of things, but the living theater was trying to do social activism, was doing street stuff and so on. The open theater was closer to Grotowski. Grotowski really didn't like the living theater that much, but he did like Joseph Chaykin and the open theater, because the open theater, Chaykin began work with the living theater, with the Becks, but then when they went off to Europe and he stayed and he started the open theater, actually he started it earlier in 1963, the year before they left. And he was dedicated to a kind of active Stanislavskiism. In other words, not realist, naturalistic acting, but still principles of total actor training, vocal control, and staging. And this is what Grotowski offered. And Grotowski really at that phase, in his poor theater phase, was dealing with a kind of a whole encyclopedia of performer knowledge. Cantor was very different. Cantor was doing auteur theater. You know, I'd say the closest person to Cantor in the American theater is Richard Foreman, who currently has a work on at the New York Public Theater called Idiot Savant. Foreman also controls every aspect of his theater, the scenography, the organization of the audience, the text, every detailed movement of the actor. So Foreman is our Cantor. And Cantor really does not have an impact in the same way. He's a model, but he can't be imitated. I don't know if the Cricot 2 theater still exists. It would be hard to imagine that it could continue to exist without its author, because Cantor actually painted with his actors. So he sets a kind of artistic model, but it's not imitatable. Grotowski is in the tradition of, Arsterva. I don't know how far back you want to get into Polish theater history, but Arsterva he had a Reduta theater in the 1930s before the advent of fascism. And he also wanted to do total actor training. And they both go back to Stanislavski, the notion that you train the process of the actor, and from there and through a careful mise-en-scene, you make a theater. Cantor was more in the tradition of the painter, and he was influenced by Alan Caprow and Happenings, and he had his whole emballage period. The one that represents Cantor, the visual arts, and one represents Grotowski, the performing arts. They're really quite a bit different. And I want to do say something about politics, because both Cantor and Grotowski, in a certain sense, artistically thrived during the communist days. Now, how could this be? We're talking here a long time before 1989. We're talking about the 60s and 70s. Grotowski did leave Poland in the 70s. But part of the paradox is, because of a severe state censorship, Grotowski had to do two things. He had to rehearse a long time. He once told me, why, Richard? Do I not open the play? I do not open the play, because the censor only comes at the end. So he kept working for years on a piece, because that's when they were free. Also, he deconstructed Polish classics, Wyspianski and so on, because how could the censor would look at the text, and if the text was okay, it would get by. But Grotowski was doing performance text rather than literary text. He did Polish classics, Kordian, Acropolis, etc., and therefore went by the censor. But inside of that, there was a great deal of artistic liberty. I mean, this is a very complicated subject, and I'm not in any sense advocating the return to communism. But under oppressive systems, artists have to find a way, and often they are extremely creative ways to get around, to subvert the oppression. What happened with the rise of Solidarity and the relationship between that movement and the liberation of Poland from communism, and the relationship between Grotowski, Cantor, and other figures. I mean, we have to think of Gardzinicza and Staniewski, and now we have a number of great Polish directors, aside Lupa, of course, but aside from Lupa, in cities outside of Warsaw, Wrocław, and Krakow. I saw some great Polish theater when I took a trip there a few years ago in Legnica, for example. So the question was asked earlier, why is Poland so advanced? I wouldn't necessarily agree that, there's good and good. We don't have to say good and bad. The Lithuanian theater is pretty damn good. I saw some things in Romania recently that were very good. But I think the question goes back to two main things. One is, of course, state support, money, the Stadt theater system, the city theater system that began in Germany and is practiced in Poland, that it's not only what happens in the center, the main center like Warszawa and Krakow, but what happens in other cities as well. And the devotion, which comes from the Stanislavski system, to intense, continuous actor training. I think these are very, very important contributions to why Polish theater is so good.
Not for nothing did Richard Foreman call one of his latter pieces, "Now that communism is dead, my life feels empty."
Yes, right, right. Now he's an idiot savant, right?
But you see, communism understood, like many totalitarian systems, understood that art is a great tool of propaganda. And maybe that was the reason why art, theater, they were so well supported, perhaps with the hope that they will become the tool of the government. Grotowski is such an example. He graduated from a state-supported school. He was a member of a kind of a communist youth movement. He was one of those revolutionary young directors in the mid-50s in this post-Stalinist era who were talking about revolution of the theater, changing things. And I think the communist government invested in him. But what he did, he traveled a lot, he saw a lot, he went to the East, and he established his own theater laboratorium in the late 50s. We are celebrating 50th anniversary of that establishment, where he stayed and he worked. And I don't think that he worked in that direction that the government was expecting. But the support helped him.
There's a paradox, of course.
Yeah.
He was not only in the youth movement, he was in the Communist Party itself, and so were members of his group. And we just had an article in TDR about Grotowski's, quote, ketmanship, quote, how he worked the system at that time, mm-hmm. both being inside it and subversive within it at the same time. Kantor was always more underground. He was underground during the Nazi occupation. He was kind of underground during the communist regime. So there are two different models. Of course, totalitarian regimes, when they have great art, they can always say to the world, look, we sponsor this great art. How can we be so bad? So it's a really complex kind of situation. I know that at the end of, in the Solidarity period, because I knew Kazimierz Braun and Swinarski and other people who were very resentful of Grotowski's politics at that point. It's very complicated. I wish I was there in L.A. so I could... do this in the flesh. It's difficult to do it from off.
You're doing a very good job, yeah. Richard.
But the institutional support lasted and continued even when the political system changed. So I don't think it's also political, but it's just the context, historical context in Poland and in a few other European countries. Art and culture are very important, especially with our history, where... Polish language and Polish identity had crisis and could not,
exactly.
for 150 years,
yes,
they could not
yes.
be perpetuated freely. The literature and theater were very, very important to the Polish people.
Absolutely. Remember the start of Ubuwa of Jarry, which is maybe the single most starting point of the modern avant-garde movement. It says, where does it take place? In Poland.
Nowhere.
That is nowhere. In other words, Poland ceased to exist as a political entity and needed to exist as a linguistic and artistic entity. That's a very important point.
Let me bring Tom in, widen this out a bit. You're obviously very much on record as a big supporter of Polish theatre. Talk to us a little bit about why that is and what you find there.
Well, I should clarify, first of all, that I'm not an expert in Polish theater or Eastern European theater at all. Like you, David, I got hooked by seeing some absolutely incredible productions, and it became increasingly a research interest of mine. In fact, I first met David on a visit to Poland, seeing one of Grzegorz's productions in his theater in Warsaw, so there you go. Just to circle back for a minute, I'm interested very much in what Richard just described as transmissions. He was talking about the influence of Polish mid-century experimental artists like Grotowski and Kantor on the American mid-century avant-garde in New York primarily, but also here in California. And I'm more interested in the question of the post-1989 transmissions. What happens to the legacy of a theater culture as rich as Poland's or many other Eastern European countries, such as Romania, where a very sophisticated visual form of theater was developed under the communist censor's watchful eyes. You can't censor a metaphor, so theater artists became extremely adept at developing an incredibly sophisticated stage language, ways of expressing publicly in one of the few public forums for expression, what couldn't be said in any means except perhaps through suggestion or metaphor or intimation. So what happens to the legacy of that, those extraordinary artists, all of those ingenious ways around censorship restrictions, what happens to that incredibly rich metaphorical imagination that you see in the clip we saw from The Dead Class in Contour, contemplations of history through artistic innovation? What happens when you lift the censorship restrictions that induced that kind of theatrical imagination, and the torch is passed to another generation of Gregorz, for instance, who is my age, right? Born in 69?
68.
68, I'm sorry. Well, still essentially the same age. What happens when you can say anything, do anything in any way, and that incredible state support is still, in many ways, still there to support an imagination on a different scale? So that's what interests me specifically as a kind of research problem. And I think that you can track, on the one hand, you can track very carefully, maybe a little bit dangerously, a kind of line of artistic influence from, let's say, Contour to Lupa, and then from Lupa, who was Gregorz's teacher. There's some influence of Lupa in your own work, I assume you would acknowledge. So on the one hand, there are sort of clear lines of artistic transmission. On the other hand, the younger generation threw out some of the conventions or some of the kind of weighty necessities that came from that very tumultuous history under communism.
Let's take the rhetoric out of the rhetorical question then, and ask Gregorz, what does happen? Coming into that, being very much at the forefront of that post-censorious, post-communist era, is that something that you are conscious of going out into the world? How much does that impact what you do? Do you chuck it out? Where does history, what place does history play in your work?
That was in the end of 80s. In the theater became in Poland very political, because that was the moment when the Solidarity movement was very important and put a lot of pressure on public thinking. And theater was very involved politically. Our intellectuals going or to the church or to the theater, and there was a lot of messages which been strictly politically, political messages. And many pieces been done in the theater, and that was very political, anti-communist meaning. Mm-hmm. Among them, there was the Christian Lupa director, who've been a little bit a part of this movement. And in the beginning of 90s, he became slowly, very slowly, more and more important. He is a teacher. He teach a lot of people and actors and directors in the theater school in Krakow. Mm. All big directors came from Krakow theater school. Krotowski, Kantor was not educated as a theater man, but he was in Krakow, and Wajda and Swinarski. And then that was the moment when, beginning of 90s, when everything changed, all the political situation changed, that suddenly all the theaters somehow collapsed. Because there was no any meaning to make the political theater, because everything fell down, and there was new, completely new situation, and theater people didn't know what to do in this moment. And many theaters slowly became empty, more and more empty. And of course, the subsidies collapsed as well, because as Richard mentioned, that was the for communists, there was the propaganda as well, especially big theaters like National Theater in Warsaw or Stary Theater in Krakow. So the subsidies collapsed. The government doesn't subsidize any longer the theaters enough. And that was the moment when the theater became quite, say, empty or open. I would call open. So they gave the theater to the young people in Poland at that time, because the young people didn't need money, didn't need a structure. They've been a little bit, you know, naive, but as well a full of energy, and they gave the Polish theater to the young directors, to the young direct managers. I became the youngest manager of the theater in Poland at that time. I was 30 years old, and I became a manager of the theater because they have no idea about how to rule the theater, how to subsidize. I remember I was making my first piece when I was a student in the third year, and during the production everything collapsed and we stopped for 2 weeks because there was no money for the employees. And that opened with the people the very good energy, especially among the artists, because then this energy was like something, not rebellion, but that was... For us, it was like a little bit, you know, like a rage or something that we would like to shout, we would like to scream, because that we are in the theater now and we would like to say something very important for us in those days. And that's how I think they opened the new era for the Polish theater, which now is still growing and growing and growing. And in Poland, I would say, compared to other countries, in Poland, theater is very important, and it's very fashion for theater in Poland. A lot of young artists coming to the theater school, and it's going up and up. And newspaper, TV, everything is full, media full with the theater. And
very hip.
And very hip, exactly.
We say that theater is Polish national sport. Perhaps we could
Here's
show the video action. For a moment. Yeah? Sorry. Richard.
I just said, here's sport is our national theater.
Yeah.
Russell, I was thinking if you could show the last DVD with trailers for TR Warszawa, just examples of Grzegorz's work. We have trailers showing off a couple of pieces. It's Macbeth, I believe. And Między nami dobrze jest. I forgot the English title.
No matter how hard we tried.
No matter how very very new. You just opened it.
This is the newest one.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Thank you. I should say that Taye Raymat has its exclusive US appearances at the Fruit Playhouse this week. Just in case we hadn't already mentioned that. Grzegorz, talk more. excuse me. Talk us through a little more about the process now. You've come through this period now. You've been the disgracefully young manager of a theater at the age of 30. Do you feel that now you become? Is there a responsibility that you've become the mainstream? Do you feel like you need to introduce new people into the mix? Where do you feel you sit in the Polish equation now? Do you even think of it in that way?
I think a little bit in that way. I mean, I've been quite lucky because I just started to make a theater in a very good moment in Poland. Immediately, I get a lot of possibility and... I was going with the new formation, and I formulate as well my theater idea and theater company at that same time. So in TR we're doing, we're introducing a lot of young directors and a lot of young actors. We provide the, for them the courses and what is most important, we're giving them possibility to showing the pieces and to work on the new pieces. So we provide a lot of new activities for the young artists. So, and after years, the theater is more and more established, more and more is institution. And yeah, through the time is a little bit, let's say, like it's already in the let's say in this theater system in Poland. It's difficult to imagine now without this theater.
Mm. So, but in terms of where your own work has gone, and we're obviously talking a lot about history tonight. I mean, clearly the explicit influence of film quite directly with something like Teorema, but if you look at something like Macbeth, it's as much Sam Peckinpah as Cantor. And there's no reason why not. So do you feel like the history of Polish theatre still means as much to your work as it did?
Mm-hmm. Very much. I mean, that is the very little distinction that Cantor and Grotowski, they've been, let's say, more or less alternative theater. Our theater is public theater, so mm-hmm. it's subsidized by the government or by the town in our case. So, and it's repertoire, it's repertoire theater. So I believe that we are in the duty as well to serve not mm-hmm. only the public, but as well to the society, to the artist, to give good service as well. So that is the difference, and more I am mature about this this idea or this statement. And with the I'm inspired very much by the movie. I like the movies very much, mm-hmm. and I'm inspired. And as well, the space when we are working now, whereas our theater is very little space, is underground as well, and was built in 1939. And it was built as a shelter because there was the war coming. So it's very little space, and audience is only 200 people in the audience, and it's very close distance from the public to the stage, even closer than here. So the way of acting in our theater and the style of our acting is very movie-like. Mm. So it's very we work very precise on details. That's I would say that is the school of Christian Lupa, mm-hmm. The way of acting. I would say that it's really coming from his. For me, is the master, especially about way of teaching how to act, or philosophy of acting, and it's very little. It's movie like, and I think that is as well our recognition. Mm. In Poland, but as well in abroad.
Mm. Richard, we still got you?
Yes.
Obviously, you have a vast amount of historical information, terrifyingly, in fact. How do you feel things have evolved? I mean, obviously, it's completely unfair to say what you think Grotowski would feel about all this, but where do you see it's come and where it's going in terms of the Polish scene?
Well, you know, I'm not an expert in the Polish scene. When I heard Grzegorz talk about film acting, it's that reverberated with me, because I'm doing a piece now which will open in New York on December 4th, and it's all about film acting. But I'm here, I can't, film acting to me, what I'm talking about film acting in the theater is subtle, it's quiet. It's not, when I listened to Grotowski to the Constant Prince clip, I didn't see it. I listened to it and I said, my God, they're shouting. And I recall it's so intense. And so I think now some of the things I've seen in Poland and outside, they're much cooler in that sense. And I do feel that Grotowski and Cantor represent perhaps a moment of high theatricality. I would say the climax and perhaps the fulfillment of what Meyerholt might have imagined for the theater, you know, not biomechanics in the literal sense, but biomechanics in the figurative sense. And now we are into more, I would call, blurry boundaries, you know, where groups integrate flawlessly, seamlessly, media into their work, where the actors are microphoned not because they can't be heard in a large space, or not because they certainly can't be heard in a space with 200 people, and I don't know whether Gregor's actors are microphoned or not, but microphoned because of the quality of the voice that comes through the media, that we no longer are entirely interested in the live. The live has become mediated, let's put it that way. So I see that direction. And I think when I think of Cantor and Grotowski, when I think of even the Living Theater, when I see them, their current work, I see something from another era. And their influence is there through transformation. But that kind of theater is not being done anymore. Or at least I haven't seen any of it. I certainly don't practice it. And I think that's kind of interesting. And I do think that from a theatrical historical point of view, we should think about the rise of realism and the fall of realism. That's the Stanislavski stuff. But at the same time, the rise of theater in the theater. And now we're at the end of that. We no longer have the theater in the theater. We have the film in the theater. We have the video in the theater. We have the internet in the theater. In other words, it's a different kind of theater. So I'm kind of asking my fellow panelists, who I cannot see, but wondering what you think of that proposition, that we're no longer in the epoch of live theater. That we're holding this panel, and we're talking about these two great live theater directors, but perhaps they were among the last of the live theater directors.
Tom?
That's a provocative proposition, Richard, for sure. But
yeah, that's the job, isn't it?
I suppose I would sort of to circle back and maybe answer both questions about what is vital in Polish theater now as I see it. Which is the perspective of an American critic, of course, not someone who's Polish. I think some of the things Richard identifies as formal characteristics of the theater are very interesting insights. But to me, I'm also very interested in some of the thematic issues that are raised, themes, questions that are raised about history, for instance, in the work of a younger director such as Grzegorz. This production opening Wednesday night, how do you say it in Polish?
In Polish, Teorema.
Teorema. Based on the Pasolini film from 1968, is about the disruption of a very bourgeois family, an industrialist family, based on the arrival of a very seductive visitor to the family household. One of your previous film adaptations, which you did in 2001, 2002, Festin, based on a film by Thomas Vinterberg, is...
Celebration.
Celebration is the, I suppose, the English translation, English title, is a film, and in also an adaptation, about a family gathering which is supposed to be to honor the patriarch of this large family that is convening on its estate. And at the moment, the very moment that the family is supposed to be praising the father of the family, the children instead stand up and announce that he was guilty of sexual abuse for years and family secrets unravel. Those are themes that are very resonant in post-communist society. I'm not accusing Grzegorz of being a political artist or of speaking in political metaphors, but I think that those are themes that are incredibly resonant in this era. So I just wanted to point out that in addition to those formal considerations that Richard is outlining in the evolution of theater, that questions about history are still being played out or explored or probed. Maybe whether you know it or not, or intended it or not.
I mean, in Poland, there was the history of saying from the state something very important. That is our tradition, that when you're going, when you're talking from the stage, it's supposed to be something important, and it's supposed to be some message or some information or some subject which opened the eyes for our public. And that after the transformation, there was a lot of subject in Poland which communist propaganda washed out, and we didn't know about it, and the media didn't say about it at all. So one of the subject was abusing, and that we've got, as a young people, we feel that we are somehow not, it's not problem of not informing, we've been a little bit cheating by the media, so we would like to put some very important subject to discuss, and Teorema for me is the performance which close this dialogue or this let's say somehow public service. That is the subject with everything is changing now, and we don't know exactly where we're going. Something happened with our life, with our family, with our society, and now is the individual path, and everybody is going his own way for searching something very important and the most important for his life. And that is very individual way, and I believe so that is the time a little bit for Polish society as well, very significant.
Can I come in here for just for a moment and say that if we consider something like Theater Czar, if we look at some of the direct descendants of Grotowski's work, let's say Guards of Nietzsche in one direction and Czar in another, I think there we have a very strong tradition of what I would call the theater in theater, and it's still being practiced. In the United States, there play people like the Double Edge Theater in Ashfield, Massachusetts, Stacy Klein, and she works, was trained by Grotowski, and we have other theaters, the New World Theater Laboratory, et cetera. So that there are these theaters that continue this tradition rather directly. But there are these others. When Grzegorz does plays that are based on film, the theme may be the themes that you outlined, which can obviously be also found in Ibsen Enemy of the People, and The Secrets Come Out, and you can find it in Arthur Miller. Those kind of domestic secrets that get revealed. That tradition goes all the way back to Oedipus, which I guess is the first domestic secret of some kind of abuse that gets revealed.
But I
think that the history of the theater must be considered most strongly in the history of its a technique of production, its means of production, rather than its themes of production. Because if we talk about themes, we are going to find universal themes that go back hundreds, if not thousands, of years. But what changes the theater is whether it is performed in a stadium for 17,000 people at the Festival of Dionysus, or in a basement for 200 people, whether it uses the most up-to-date technology that is available to a society, or whether it wants to be acoustic, let's say, as opposed to electronic. At least those are the things that fascinate me. And what I saw when I was in Poland was extraordinarily sophisticated acting and directing in the theaters outside of Warsaw and Krakow. It was still theater in the theater, and very, very, very good. Now, I haven't seen Grzegorz's work, so I want to ask, do you use digital technology inside your theater in a direct way, the way, I don't know if you've ever seen something like the Builders Association in the United States or the Wooster Group, and how they integrate digital means of communication. So does your theater do this, or is your theater about actors and audiences in confronting themselves without digital mediation?
I'm using a lot of media and video.
Doesn't surprise.
Since the very, very beginning, from my first performances. And now, even that our theater is very small, we're using microports as well. because yes. that gives a lot of new possibilities and
that's what I consider extremely significant, that the vocabulary, just like when electric lights were introduced and lighting became malleable at the end of the 19th and into the 20th century, that profoundly changed what theater was. I think these new media are that to me is the core of the history of the theater.
Yeah, as you say, the tools all evolve, but it's still live theater. I mean, I think that's crucial.
We put the line on the twittering.
No live twittering. And
I am talking to you in Austin.
Exactly, there you are.
Well, everybody mentioned the sophisticated director, and Grzegorz mentioned his master, Christian Lupa. So I would like to pose one question to David. When are we going to see Christian Lupa in Los Angeles?
Well, I'm going to see Christian Lupa in Warsaw on Saturday. I know that's not the question you're asking. Believe me, I really do. Hey, talk about being put on the spot. I am actually flying to Warsaw on Thursday to see Christian Lupa's Marilyn project, which I hear fantastic things about. I looked at Christian Lupa's last project, which was based on Andy Warhol. He's doing a trilogy. Who's the third one, by the way? Does anybody know?
Gurdjieff, I think.
Who?
Gurdjieff.
I thought it was supposed to be a trilogy of American heroes. That's why I was taken aback. I thought you were going to say Muhammad Ali. No, because I thought it was supposed to be a third American hero. I thought that because it's Warhol, Marilyn Monroe.
Yeah, I'm not sure they're all.
Yeah, that threw me. I would very much like to bring Lupa to the United States. The Factory 2 project, I think 80 people travel with that project. So basically you have to hire your own plane. I'm conscious of the fact that this could run and I'm learning so much myself.
It's like Polish theater.
Yeah, because Factory 2 is 5.5 hours long, and we could easily match that. Is it 8 hours long?
Eight hours long.
Right. Well, I promise to try and keep this to an hour and a half. So now is the moment to take any questions from the floor. If you have any questions, now is your chance. I think there's a microphone in the house. Here we go. We have one over here. Oh, there we go. That's better. Oh, is he gone?
I've lost sound, by the way.
Oh, Richard, we lost you?
Oh, no. Your vision.
I didn't realize we were saying goodbye to Richard. Can you not hear us, Richard?
That's funny. You. The question was for him.
Could you mail it to us? Did we lose Richard? He'll be back. All Any right. other questions? Let's start with someone else and come back to Richard.
Yeah, I can hear now.
All right. Yeah. Good old technology. Were you just doing that to prove a point?
No, I wasn't. But what was the question?
The first question is for you.
Mr. Schechner, first of all, a comment. I had the wonderful opportunity to do a workshop with you 20 years ago, and my gratitude continues to this day.
Thank you.
My question is, of all the Polish productions I've seen, extreme physicality seems to be a characteristic. Is that from the work of Cantor and Grotowski, or was that present prior to their work?
Well, that's a question that a historian of Polish performance would have to answer, but certainly the work of Oszterwa was highly physical as well. But I think one of the experts, Johanna or someone, would have to answer that. Grotowski had his own particular means of full body training, and Cantor did not follow that means. He was interested in bodies in a totally different way. He was interested in the convergence of the inanimate and the animate, the mannequin and the man. So if one goes back to theater theory, you could say that Cantor traces himself back to Gordon Craig and the that kind of a non-human human actor, and has a lot in common with the animation in film, where you can really control things. And Grotowski is much more of a humanist, and he roots his stuff in the absolute soul of the actor, and the fact that the most personal is also the archetypal. So they both result in a physical theater, but a very, very different kind of physical theater, different causes and different processes.
Thank you, Richard. We can now hear you and not see you, just FYI. So.
Well, maybe that's better.
My question is very similar. The plays we have seen mainly at UCLA Live, and they did not really require us to understand Polish. And they were very, very expressive and impressive, too. However, if we would want to go to Krakow or Warsaw and want to see plays with language, would it be similar, or would it be an experience where we really do not follow, as in whatever other language we might be speaking other than Polish?
Well, I would say language of theater is such that that even with the linguistic barrier, the theater gets to you or doesn't get. I don't think that David, that when you went, or Tom, quite often you come to Poland to festivals, we don't have subtitles. We don't have super titles. And yet there are powerful, charged, and gripping productions. Some are not, of course. And sometimes it's a test. We have a first chance to bring a repertory company. Grzegorz's company is more of a repertory with trained actors with text and language, where language is very important. Productions that came so far were more of a different, as you say, vein, and sometimes it was also economy, straight economy. We brought small productions.
But, for instance, Theater Czar is a wordless trilogy.
Yeah.
Consists of ancient music, movement, physicality.
Yeah. But I think great theater transcends language. Sadly, so does bad theater. But,
yes.
You could definitely tell. I can barely order a drink in Polish, and I could definitely spot the good from the bad.
It's a test if you fly from the airport and if you don't fall asleep, you know, straight to the theater.
Okay, we have a question here. You got a mic?
Thank you. You talked a lot about the history, the effects of history, politics, communism, and so on. To what degree you attribute the greatness of the Polish theater to the Polish schools of theater? How good are the schools? How good are the teachers?
They are excellent. Well, maybe Grzegorz should answer it, but I think they are excellent. And
I mean, that is the very long training in Poland. You know, to get to the theater, you have to be trained. And the theater directors first have to be educated in university, and later they are allowed to join to the theater school. So they are quite mature. Yeah, still young persons, but mature. And the acting theater is taking 4 years, and that is really 4 years from the morning, 8 o'clock, they're starting the physical training, going till 12, and then till 8 o'clock in the evening they've got classes. So that's why they are very, the professional actors, theater actors, and they're very well prepared.
I have to say it's a different school system. There are no drama departments at any university or college. There are only 4 schools of theater, drama, akademie teatralne in Poland, and it's highly competitive to get in there. Sometimes 400-500 people vying for just one place.
Like the Yale School of Drama.
You had to get your commercial in. Fair enough.
This is Verm Studiagina. It's really more about a question of perception. Richard was talking about, you know, quoting Meyerhold, and I'm wondering to what extent you see yourselves as part of carrying on a tradition of Polish theater, as Poles developing works in Polish language as part of a national identity, or do you see yourselves as modern, making modern theater? You happen to be in Poland, this happens to be your language, but you see yourselves as heirs as much to Majakowski and Meyerhold or to any avant-garde outside Poland versus a specific national tradition? Or both? It's or neither? For you? For Ms. Klass? For either?
Yeah, I think that the Polish theater is under influence of Russian theater, and the most from Anton Chekhov, I believe. And but there is the Polish tradition Richard mentioned about Osterwa, who was based in Krakow as well. And and then for me the another teacher, the big teacher about acting, is the Christian Lupa. And I think that now is still living guy. And I think in the history when we'll be such session in 20 years, I think that he will be play a big role in the Polish history of the theater, of teaching and giving a style. Because that's what we young people, but new generation of Polish theater, really those people which are meaning something in Polish theater, the, all of them is the pupil of Christian. He learned us, and this style of acting is really working outside. It's really working, and that's what was the question, how it works. With this way of acting, there is very minimalistic, realistic, let's say, acting, but that's involved a lot of emotions. Not like shouting, but there is the moment when it's something important, what we would like to say, the emotion a little bit increasing, and the audience can feel it and share it. And that is the Christian Lupa style, which is that is really different. Acting, Polish acting, theater, Polish acting is different than from the other countries. Like Richard mentioned, Lithuanian theater is more Meyerhold system, really physicality and body. But I would say that the Polish is more dealing with the inner space and all the methods, which I don't want to bore, but Christian is providing the method of inner space, inner monologue, inner thinking, and how the body betray our thinking. That is his philosophy. I mean, he's not the guy who is teaching how to act. He's the guy who's thinking how to think about it, and he is saying that our body express our thinking and about our emotion. And it was natural way of doing that the audience is sharing this feeling and can read without the words. That's let's say, the short statement of Christian Lupa method.
I think we better call it a day there. Thank you so much. I want to thank our panelists, Tom Zregors, Joanna, and Virtual Richard. Thank you all. Thank you to the library. KRA match opens on Wednesday. There are only about 80 tickets left. Zara's gone, sorry. Thank you all. Good night.
Aloud Audio is presented by the Library Foundation of Los Angeles and made possible through support provided by the Ralph M. Parsons Foundation, the Annenberg Foundation, City National Bank, contributors to the Stay Home and Read a Book Ball, Donna and Martin J. Wolf, and the law firm Arendt Fox. Media support provided by KPCC 89.3 FM, KUSC 91.5 FM, and KCET. A loud theme composed by Larry Karish.